Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. Maybe you've noticed it on your block, a stately elm with an ugly red ring spray painted around it, marketed for city crews to cut down. Dutch elm disease isn't at the height it was in the 70s when we lost a tragic number of trees, but many people perceive it to be on the rise. Where once the Twin Cities had tens of thousands of elm trees, now we're down to thousands, so that the losses are felt more keenly. In St. Paul, city officials figure to lose about 400 trees this year. In Minneapolis, they've already marked more than 2,000 for cutting. And that's not even counting trees on private property. Well, people feel it deeply when they lose a tree, so we thought we'd take your questions today as we talk to Mark Stennis. He's a plant pathologist and arborist with top-notch tree care. He's president of the Minnesota Society of Arboriculture. He joins us in the studio. Thanks for doing so.
Well, thanks, Catherine. Good morning.
Now, what is Dutch elm disease?
Dutch elm disease is a disease of the genus Ulmus around the northern hemisphere. It's caused by a fungus, and it's got a name, and I'm not sure that it's important that you know what the name is. It's Ophiostoma novoulmi, but it's spread by an insect that breeds in the bark of disease-killed elm trees. It also spreads upon occasion from tree to tree through roots that they develop in common when they grow together on the same site. It's a vascular wilt.
I'm going to stop you. A vascular wilt. Well, what does that mean?
Well, the term is very good, very descriptive, wilt. Especially early in the summer, the trees conspicuously wilt. They'll start to pale green, then they'll dry up. First form leaves will hang on, but later in the summer they'll wilt, and then the abscission layer will form, and the leaves will fall off.
The what layer will form?
I'm sorry, I'll try and not be
it's
technical.
Okay.
It's the separation between the leaf and the woody stem that forms while it's growing. And presence of the fungus in the tree in the latter part of the summer causes that layer to form prematurely and the leaves fall. If you have a tree in your yard or near you that's now dying of Dutch elm disease, it is defoliating and in some cases quite rapidly, dropping lots of leaves.
So when a tree has Dutch elm, you know it. There's not much of a question about it?
Well, there are other things that you could confuse with Dutch elm disease, but if you stand at a distance and look at an elm tree that appears to be dying and wilting and the leaves falling off, it's in most cases Dutch elm disease. If the tree is in otherwise good shape, yeah.
And how does a tree get this again?
Well, it's spread by an insect that breeds in the bark of trees that have previously died of Dutch elm disease. Dutch elm disease is a poster child of contagious diseases because the insect that emerges from this disease-killed tree, from the bark in the disease-killed tree, is carrying the fungus that killed the tree. Now, the connection is that before she can go and lay her eggs in new broodwood, which is freshly killed wood, she's got a mate, and she does that while feeding in twig crotches in the canopy of mature trees. She feeds deep enough in the twig crotches to connect all the way down to the wood, and particularly in the early summer when the new large diameter vessels are forming, those infections occur because she puts the fungus right in the wound that she creates, which makes Dutch elm disease such a contagious disease.
How did it start? If it's contagious, it had to start somewhere. Has anyone done the history
The history goes way back, and I don't know if it's necessary to take you further back than when it was characterized by some women plant pathologists in the Netherlands back in the early 1900s. It took them a while to characterize it, but they finally made the connection. They did the postulates where you recover the fungus and get it in pure culture in the laboratory, and then you take the culture and you put it back in a healthy tree and recreate the symptoms, and then subsequently recover the pathogen again, so that they made the connection between the fungus that causes the disease and the disease itself. And we imported it from Europe on elm logs back in the... There's some debate about exactly when, but I think it was in the late 20s or early 30s, we imported elm logs from Europe. And they were on a train. They made their way from the coast all the way into Cleveland and other points in the central part of the United States, and that's how Dutch elm disease got started.
Huh. Now, can you save a tree once it gets Dutch elm disease?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, but you got to catch it quick. It's been shown 30 years ago that you can save trees, diseased trees, by pruning out the infection. The problem with that procedure, however, is that the lesion or the infection itself is way ahead of the symptoms. You know, the symptoms, again, are wilting, but the fungus is present in the sapwood, in the brand new sapwood in the tree, and the infection is way ahead of symptoms, meaning it's deeper into the tree than just the wilting. And in many cases, a very small amount of wilting in the top of the tree can represent a very large vascular lesion inside the tree itself. So pruning has to be very severe in some cases. But now, in the last 22 years, we've had chemical treatments that are effective if they catch the tree quickly, get the chemical in, get enough of it in, and get it distributed uniformly, that you can stop Dutch elm disease in trees that are not too seriously infected and not have to prune out anything more than the parts of the tree that are wilted. So we've got good technology. It's just that you have to catch it quick.
Now, the 70s was really the height of Dutch elm disease. Yeah. Talk for a minute about what we lost there.
Well, I was a graduate student at the University of Minnesota at the time working on the use of systemic fungicides for the control of Dutch elm disease. And during the summer of 1978, which was, I believe, can be characterized as the height of the epidemic, the city of St. Paul alone lost 46,000 elm trees in 1 year. And it happened again because, well, it's a long and rather complicated conversation, and it's due as much to politics as it is to the biology. Because, again, the fungus or the disease, Dutch elm disease, is a poster child of contagious diseases. If you find the contagion, get rid of it before it spreads. That's how you manage Dutch elm disease. That's how cities like Minneapolis still have, by my estimate, at least 100,000 elm trees left. That's why they can lose 2,000 a year and it still be less than 2%.
Is that counting private and public property?
That's all trees.
Right.
Now, the official count in Minneapolis, and I may be corrected for this, but I think it's about 85,000. But you see, that count comes from counting back from the last time they counted their elm population, was in 1963. And if you're familiar at all with American elm and how fast it grows, a tree in 37 years can get to be a mature tree without a problem. And around here, American elm is extremely aggressive. It's been rarely planted on purpose, but it's still coming up in people's backyards and along their fence and, you know, behind a garage. And if you look critically as you go down up and down the streets in Minneapolis or other cities, there's a very large contingent of volunteer American elms that happen to have volunteered in a very important place. So, again, by my estimate, and that would be very interesting to have an official count, I think Minneapolis has at least 100,000 mature elm trees left on public and private property. And that's just within the limits of Minneapolis.
All right. So we lost a lot in the 70s.
Lots. Lots. It was like the demon among us. It was for me, working on Dutch elm disease as a graduate student, to see everything that was happening and, you know, kind of want to jump out of the car and save that one and fix that one, I couldn't do that because it was just so pervasive. It was a very serious problem and qualified very much as a epidemic.
How did it change the landscape?
Well, there's not an awful lot of good change in the landscape. The biggest change has been the component or what the urban forest is made up as a consequence of what happened because of Dutch elm disease. Because when you take down a diseased elm tree, the last thing you're going to do is plant another one. So you're going to need to be planting other things. And I think collectively as a urban community group of professionals, we made some mistakes, and we planted too many of a certain, several different varieties of trees, particularly in my world, green ash. I mean, there was a time when I believe 4 out of 10 trees that were being planted, or even more than that, were green ash. Now, I have my opinions about green ash, and let me suffice it to say that it is not a suitable substitute for American elm. And we planted lots of Norway maples, and we planted a lot of lindens, and subsequently, now it's been 30 years, we're beginning to learn that these trees have problems of their own. Some of them are own fault by how they're cultured and how they're planted, but trees get diseases, and they have a limit on their life that is generally shorter than what an American elm would have. And you can point to a number of places, like things that have happened on the state fairgrounds in recent years, where you can do all kinds of really nasty things to American elm, and they will live through it, where other trees would not.
Are we seeing a rise again in Dutch elm disease?
There does appear to be an increase in Dutch elm disease in the last couple of years, and there's some conjecture that it's due to a sequence of mild winters. And in as much as there may be some truth to that, during the epidemic and since, we haven't had any reduction in Dutch elm disease as a consequence of sequences of bitter winters. And the argument is that more bark beetles survive the winter, and that may be true, but my opinions aren't shared by everybody about how this happened, but they're formed because of some experience that I've got starting once back in the mid-70s when I equipped with a thick spore suspension of the fungus that causes the disease, a knife and a syringe and a bucket truck, and getting up into mature trees and putting the fungus in the trees for the purpose of assessing the effectiveness of the chemicals that we were testing. And then you have to have controls and checks, too. And then again in the early 90s, where I was in the tree, again, inoculating trees with this pathogen in many different places on many different dates throughout the season, that I learned that it's not as simple as it appears when you see Dutch elm disease developing in a tree. The argument has long been that infection occurs mostly in May and June because that's when the trees are forming their large diameter springwood vessels. But in the truth, trees can be infected at any time during the growing season. It's just a lower probability later. But my point is this, is that even when I was equipped with the most aggressive strain of the fungus that Dr. John Gibbs could find for me, and inoculated mature trees second week of May when it's the height of their susceptibility, the longest flag, we say, or I like to call it, the longest branch that would wilt during that season in which the inoculation occurred was about 5 or 6 feet long. And my point is this, is that the infections that we're seeing out there that are killing trees this year and last year are very often a year or two or three old. And it's not easy for a tree inspector on the ground to recognize that. It's easy to look up and say, oh, we have Dutch elm disease, it's new this year, and it's just not the case. Because it takes a lot longer for symptoms or for infection to develop into symptoms, to a symptomatic infection. In other words, you put the fungus in the tree in one day, and even at the very beginning of the season, you got to wait a month to 6 weeks before you're going to see symptoms. So there's this delayed effect, and it's hard to blame the upsurge in Dutch elm disease on mild winters, in as much as it may have a small component. The truth of the matter is there's a couple of elements, and one is that we're getting complacent about it. There are lots of diseased trees standing around, and I spend a lot of time in the trees or in the city because people can't bring their trees in, so I get to look and observe what's happening in the urban forest. And the problem now is that there are a lot of trees, mature American elm trees, sitting on boulevard strips that are stone cold dead. And the problem with that is that now that they're standing on the streets and they're completely dead, there are substantial portions of those trees that are breeding bark beetles and spreading Dutch elm disease as we speak. And then there are wood piles in people's backyards. And there are small trees that become infected behind a garage or in the woods or in places where the tree inspectors don't find them. And even a 6 or 8 or 10 inch elm tree that dies of Dutch elm disease can breed plenty of bark beetles and spread Dutch elm disease all over the neighborhood.
We're talking to Mark Stennis. He's a plant pathologist and arborist with top-notch tree care. He's the president of the Minnesota Society of Arboriculture. We're talking about the rise in Dutch elm disease. We'd like to know what questions you have about Dutch elm disease and trees, the urban forest, as Mr. Stennis calls it. 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. You say that we have a lot of dead Dutch elms on the streets. How can they still be standing if they're dead?
Well,
do they not look dead?
They look dead.
You're making it sound like a horror story.
Well, the answer to your question is, I can't. I can't answer the question as to why cities are allowing mature elm trees to die completely and stand on the boulevard strip. They may have red bands on them, but the red bands doesn't keep bark beetles from emerging. And I think it's a matter of complacency where we've been successful with the management of Dutch elm disease. Some cities more successful than others, but again, being a poster child of contagious diseases, and the state recognized this years ago when they wrote the law that they would subsidize inspection and removal programs so that if you found the trees and got them out in 20 days, the state would share the cost of removing the trees. And the logic is simple, is that you'd find a contagion and get rid of it, you reduce the incidence of Dutch elm disease, and increase the time it takes for your population to diminish.
So I am a citizen, and on my private property, I have what is probably a dead Dutch elm. Mm-hmm. What do I do?
Well, if you're in Minneapolis or St. Paul or any of the other cities that are participating in the Shade Tree Disease Control Program and have tree inspectors that are certified by the state, they have the authority, and if your tree is already dead, it should have been on your property, mark the tree and provided you with a notice with a minimum amount of time that you have to remove the tree. That's what it should be. If you have a dead tree, you could call the city and they'll come and give you that notice. I guess in some areas where the entire community is aware of Dutch elm disease, people, just because of pressure from their neighbors, are not allowed to keep dying trees.
Now, I was just going to say, if I see a dead elm, I'm really going to know it's dead. It's not going to...
Well, if it doesn't have any leaves, it's a dead tree, you know. Especially if the leaves, what leaves it has left, are wilting and falling. And it doesn't really matter all that much if the tree died of Dutch elm disease or bulldozers or soil compaction, because they breed bark beetles in either case. And as it turns out, bark beetles, when they come to breed in that new wood, can bring the fungus with them when they come in. So a tree that dies of chainsaw and winds up in a wood pile can, in fact, spread Dutch elm disease to other trees in the neighborhood.
So with a Dutch elm, then, we're just supposed to burn it?
Well, at this stage now, there are legal ways to dispose of it, and probably the best way is to put it into a tub grinder and make chips out of it to somehow separate the bark from the wood.
We're going to go to John, calling us from St. Louis Park. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, Catherine. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
My question is, how long does a Dutch elm tree last as far as its longevity, its lifespan? And then I've got a beautiful Dutch elm tree in my backyard that I've got neighbors that have got trees that are marked, and I'm wondering how that's going to affect my tree.
Oh, very good question. First off, by means of semantics, the trees that are dying in North America of Dutch elm disease are American elms. There's red elm and rock elm and a few others too, but Dutch elm disease is the character of the disease, not the tree. All right. Now, I would suspect that if you're in St. Louis Park, it's an American elm. And your neighbor's trees, if they are diseased and dying and marked, they have a certain minimum amount of time to get rid of those trees. And the trees can affect you in either one of two ways, or both ways, in fact. If the trees are close enough, if your canopies touch and they're large diameter trees and they're within 50 to 75 feet, your tree can become infected from their trees by virtue of their common root system. And that kind of spread can be prevented by finding the disease very early and removing the tree before the fungus gets into the stem and into the root crown and into the ground. The other way that it can spread to your tree is if it stands around long enough to breed bark beetles. And that's the kind of thing where, you know, it takes municipal programs and committed people and homeowners like yourself who understand how important it is.
Is there any way to inoculate your tree?
Yes, we've had... Inoculated, again, by way of semantics, is what you do when you put the pathogen in the plant, or what you do to yourself when you're inoculated with an inactivated virus. What we do to protect American elms, since plants do not have immune systems, is we put systemic fungicides in them. It's a systemic fungicide injection. And since the late 70s, we've had a treatment that is substantially effective at preventing bark beetle inoculation of the Dutch elm disease fungus. And I've been in the business since 1981 and been confident enough of the treatments that we've been using to write guarantees that we can protect your trees for three growing seasons and guarantee it against the cost of treating your tree. And now, in the last 6 or 7 years, there's new chemistry that's equally effective but much easier on the tree, requires a smaller volume of solution. So the time marches on, and yes, we do have effective treatments for trees that you want to protect. You can even save some trees that are already infected if you catch them quick enough.
We're going to go to Kevin, calling us from White Bear. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
When I was growing up, we had lots of beautiful elms, and we lost them all. And in an effort to replace those, I ordered several American elms from the Elm Research Institute out east that are supposed to be resistant to the disease, and I was wondering what his opinion is of that.
Ah, good. Another great question. I was hoping this was going to come up. The Elm Research Institute has provided a series of, it's a combination of, I think, 12 or 13 or 14 different clones called the Liberty Series. And they are elms that do, to some extent, tolerate Dutch elm disease. The record on that group of elms isn't quite as good as on some new elms that have just been released by the National Arboretum. Denny Townsend did some research. He was even featured in an article in the Smithsonian not very long ago about two genuine, bona fide American elms with all the characteristics of American elm that substantially tolerate Dutch elm disease. Now, the names on them are Valley Forge. That's the one that has the highest degree of tolerance. And then there's another one called New Harmony, which also has a substantial degree of tolerance to Dutch elm disease. Now, tolerance means just that. It doesn't mean immunity. But it does mean that if a tree is going to die, one of these trees is going to die, it's going to be because it's overwhelmed with inoculation. And they can die, but I would bet on them if I had an opportunity. There's also one other elm that was released by Princeton Nursery back in the 20s, which was released because it has such perfect horticultural characteristics, those things you look for in a mature American elm, the vase-shaped and the good branch angles and the great canopy density and good color. It was a very perfect American elm that they stopped releasing once the epidemic hit. Well, they discovered several decades later that there were places where they had planted Princeton elm where the Dutch elm disease had come through, and the only ones that were surviving were Princeton elm. So it turns out that very much by accident, they had released a genuine, bona fide American elm that had some substantial tolerance to Dutch elm disease. So there are other American elms that are available.
We're going to go to Kathy in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that on our block, what has happened is that the trees that are living on the boulevards are diseased and dying, and trees that are in private yards are being marked to be removed. I have trees on the boulevard that are fairly close to an elm in my backyard, and you may have already answered this while I was on hold. I'm wondering about the spread to my existing tree that looks pretty good. I actually dug holes in my backyard in 1988 when we had so little rain and put the hose in there trying to relieve some of the stress that my tree was probably experiencing. And then the other question I would have is, how does one get one of these other trees and how fast do they grow, the ones that he just mentioned that seem to be resistant to Dutch elm?
All right. Thanks, Kathy.
Oh, great questions. If the tree in your backyard is far enough away and the canopies do not touch and there are obstacles in the middle, the probability is against root graft infection. Minneapolis has been pretty darn good at removing trees on public property that are marked. I mean, they mark them and then they cut the tops off them, and before you know it, they're gone. Sometimes, much to my chagrin, I've been in a few cases where I think we could have saved some of those trees, but that is how you manage Dutch elm disease from a cultural point of view. Again, poster child of contagious diseases. Find it and get rid of it. Get rid of it soon enough, you prevent root graft transmission. The answer about the American elms that are available, there's been very little interest. And among the reasons is, come Dutch elm disease, the nurseries, and they released them quite a ways into the epidemic, but then they finally stopped, and there was no elms for a while, and then they started releasing some of these that have been bred, like Siberian elm crossed with red elm, trees that tolerate Dutch elm disease were planted in the landscape. The problem with them is that they didn't perform very well. They get every other bug, pest, pathogen, and parasite of elm that American elm does not get, except Dutch elm disease. So they didn't perform very well, and now we wind up with none. No elm trees available. Well, I put on, and the availability, I'm going to get into this little story, I'll be as brief as possible, about the availability of these disease-tolerant elms. There are several nurseries that are growing rooted cuttings. We need to get wholesale nurseries to buy them and plant them and get them available. Right now, I put on my MSA hat and wrote a letter to a wholesale nursery in Tennessee, and I said, send me a bundle of 50 of each in the bill, and you know, we'll take care of it. Well, a couple of days later, 6 days later, I got a package with 250 rooted cuttings. And 6 days later, a bill for $6 for shipping. So I got quite a deal. In any event, I found some interest among some nurseries. Dale Bachman at Bachman's was interested, and he had his JD out at Lakeville plant, about 70 of them out in their field to see how they perform. Laws Nursery got some, the Minnesota State Fair got some, the Department of Plant Pathology at the University got some, Tree Trust got some, and then I kept a few. And I got about 4 feet of growth from a rooted cutting that was 6 inches long on about 26 trees in pots. And I've also got another elm in my backyard that I've been cultivating. They grow faster than anything else, except perhaps a Siberian elm, silver maple or cottonwood, and they do it with a magnificent grace that is just unequaled anywhere else. So in the next couple of years, there's going to be some of these trees available.
All right. We're talking to Mark Stennis. He's president of the Minnesota Society of Arboriculture. We're talking about the spread of Dutch elm disease. It seems to be on the rise again. Of course, and now we have far more tools than we did in the 1970s at the height of that tragedy. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. We're continuing our conversation with Mark Stennis. He's a plant pathologist and arborist. He's president of the Minnesota Society of Arboriculture. We're talking to him about Dutch elm disease. It's back. Well, it never really left us. It is on the rise, but we have different tools than we did in the 1970s. Maybe you have seen trees marked for cutting on your block, marked for demolition. If you've seen that big, ugly red ring spray painted around an elm, then you're probably seeing Dutch elm disease. Now, our lines are full right now, but we're going to give out the numbers so you can call in just a minute or two with your tree question, 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Gerald in St. Paul. Gerald, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I have a wonderful elm in my front yard that I had inspected by the city. And they said it has no symptoms of Dutch elm disease, but I should have it treated. I'm wondering if there's a preferred chemical to ask for, kind of what the expected price would be, and whether there's some sort of city subsidy.
Okay. There's two chemicals that are effective. One was labeled back in 1978. The other one got its full label here 2 years ago. Either one's effective. I have my opinion since I did a substantial amount of research on both of them. The new one is the only one we're using at Top Notch Tree Care, and it's called Alamo. And the reason why I prefer it, principally, is because it's so much easier on the tree. Again, we get into a long conversation about that, but it's not necessary. I guarantee protection for 3 seasons. Cost depends upon the size. If your tree is, 30 inches in diameter, which is a large, mature tree, you're looking at $350 to $400 with it every 3 years if you want continuous protection.
Alamo? That's not necessarily a great name to save something with, is it?
Well, it's more than a fort in Texas, and it was named Alamo because of the research that was done on oak wilt with this product in Texas, starting in the mid-80s.
Now, you mentioned oak wilt. We've been talking about Dutch elm disease, but, of course, there's lots of other diseases out
mm-hmm.
there. Why is it that Dutch elm disease seems to grab our attention more than oak wilt or ash yellows?
Well, I think the tide is turning toward the oak wilt problem because more people are moving into our indigenous oak stands where we have a problem with oak wilt. Dutch elm disease is so conspicuous because of, well, the concentration of people in the cities that had mature American elms for shade trees. But oak wilt is building in importance. It's similar in how it causes disease, a very closely related fungus that gets around in different ways. The biggest thing we have going for us in that case is that it doesn't spread over land very well, but it does grow through root grafts really a lot. And we've had technology that cuts roots since, again, the mid-70s, and now there's new chemical technology it makes it a pleasure to be in this business, to have powerful tools like this that we can use to prevent root graft transmission between even trees in the red oak group, even when they're very close together, where you can't cut roots between the trees.
We're going to go to Bob in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Mr. Stennis maybe 10 or 15 years ago about it's a good 40 inches in diameter. It's about a 60-year-old elm tree in the backyard, and it runs like many elms do into the power lines. And NSP maybe 10, 15 years ago did their own trimming, and they were kind of cautious about it. But now I think they contracted out to the low bidder cutter, and every so many years they come by and they want to hack your elm in the midst of the April, May, and June. And I had understood, I think I spoke with you many years ago, that was the real risky season. They really should defer trimming those alley elms until after the 1st of July. And secondly, at that time you had a substance called Arbitec. I presume that's the older stuff that you no longer use. I think you injected it into the flares.
Mm-hmm.
Is Alamo the replacement for that, and does that also go into the flares?
Yes, professionally and from my point of view, Alamo is a superior product because it's easier on the tree and easier to apply because it's lower volume, but the technique is exactly the same. You put it in the same way. Now, about the timing, you know, April, May, and June is a bad time to be pruning anything, but the trees that are most susceptible to diseases that spread as a consequence of wounding are oak trees. There are also mountain ash and crab apples, or at least apples and a few other trees. But if you could, and you can't because they have to clear the power lines, there's very little proof of a connection between pruning time and the spread of Dutch elm disease. Oak wilt's different.
What is a flare? He said you would inject that in the flare.
Okay.
Lots of lingo here.
All right. To make any of these chemicals effective, We have to get them distributed evenly throughout the canopy of the tree. And normal trees have a buttress root, have roots that emanate from the trunk as it goes into the ground. Well, to get enough, basically, holes to get the chemical distributed uniformly, you need to go below grade where the tree is bigger, and you can have a larger number of spaces to select your injection sites. And again, it's to make the product effective, to get it distributed uniformly throughout the canopy. It's critical to success. That uniform distribution is critical to success.
All right. We're going to go to Randy in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi. I got a question for you about Siberian elm. It seems to be very prevalent in the metro area. And how is that for harboring elm bark beetles that carry the fungus that causes Dutch elm disease? And what about removal of that? I mean, how effective is a program if you have so much Siberian elm around?
Good question. And Siberian elm breed bark beetles in the same way that American elm breed bark beetles, and they can spread Dutch elm disease. But more importantly, if there's a Siberian elm that's dying, any part of it that's dying, get rid of it, either the dying tree or the dying parts, because it does breed bark beetles.
Thank you. I have a huge old elm tree in my backyard, and I'm concerned because there's about a 4-foot length gash on the trunk, and it's weeping and real wet. Is that a symptom of Dutch elm disease?
No. Dutch elm disease kills the tree by causing the leaves to dry up and fall off. The gash in the trunk is something you can't do anything about, and the wetwood, which is what it's called, there's a long story about it. Don't worry about it. In fact, it helps the tree protect itself from decay. Dutch elm disease is another matter again. That's just bacterial wetwood.
How do trees end up with gashes?
Well, there's lightning or bulldozers or storm damage that rips branches off or any number of things that wound trees. And thankfully, American elm tolerates that kind of stuff as well or better than anything else.
And so the wetwood, I mean, as she said, it
wetwood's an infection, basically, of old wood where starch has been stored in living cells that eventually died. Well, once the cells die, then they become colonized by bacteria and yeast that ferment the starch, and the product of fermentation is a liquid that it'll push out under pressure, under any space it can. But the presence of that infection in old wood helps the tree resist decay organisms that would love to get in there.
Talk for a minute about the storms of 98. They seem to have a big impact on our elm population.
Well, they had a big impact on all our trees.
Right.
It was a devastating series of storms. And I guess if there's anything good that happened out of that, it was from some research that was done at the University of Minnesota by Gary Johnson, who discovered that the newest epidemic in urban forest health is stem-girdling roots on young trees that happens because of poor culture, trees that are cultured too deep or planted too deep in a pot and then planted too deep in the soil, and then subsequently wind up with girdling roots that either kill them or cause them to fail in storms. So that's the newest epidemic in forest health, is stem girdling roots.
What do we mean by girdling roots?
Okay. Well, I'll make it as concise as possible. When you plant a new tree, make sure that the root crown, where the roots, primary lateral roots, emanate from the trunk, is planted at the ground line. Because if you plant any part of the trunk, those roots come back to the surface and head out to where their needs are met, which is often around the trunk. Now, roots will graft to roots, and branches will graft to branches, but branches will not graft to roots. So if you plant any part of this trunk, which is technically a branch, and it becomes in contact with the roots, it'll strangle itself and either die or fail in a storm. And the sad part is not just the tree you're losing, but the time you lost between the time you planted it and the time it died of a completely predictable and fully preventable disease.
We're going to go to John in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
The question I had is, related to problems with trees in general. I had heard that there's a beetle, a borer, that was imported in from China and I guess was noticed in Chicago. And they had, removed all the trees within a 3-block area where they noticed this. And I was wondering if you were familiar with the name of that beetle and, how it kills the trees and why why it's such a problem.
Okay. It's called the Asian longhorn beetle, and I don't have any direct personal experience with it other than seeing it's a beautiful beetle. But it was imported, allegedly, and I believe, on dunnage from China. Dunnage are things that they store or they box heavy equipment in. And it's an insect that loves to bore in almost anything, particularly maples, and it doesn't kill them outright, but it causes them to fail, and they eventually die. And it's a potential disaster in the making. And Chicago may be having better luck dealing with it and finding them all and getting rid of the trees than New York is. It's one of those things that's not only a biological problem, and we're beginning to understand that, it's a political problem where people want to keep their infested trees, and it could be developed into a very serious problem.
We're going to go to Kate in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi. A few years ago, my tree care company replaced Arbortech with Alamol as an experiment, and two of my trees, I have three elm trees, and two of them are a little smaller, and they said it would be easier on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But then three years later, when they came back to inject them again, they said they weren't using Alamol anymore because they found it not just of little effect on Dutch elm disease, of zero effect is what they told me.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for oak wilt that has zero effectiveness with Dutch elm. I don't know if I should say who my tree care company is or not.
I know.
We actually don't need to get into commercial names.
Right, no. Well, they're wrong. And I've been using, our company has been using nothing but Alamo since 1996. And I started using Arbortech in 1981. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there isn't any question that it's an effective product. But Alamo is equally effective both as a preventive and as a therapeutic. My guarantees have not changed. Of the hundreds of trees that we've treated since 1996, I've lost two trees under warranty. And,
really?
And it's the product is working beautifully. And I also have data which will soon be published, which indicates the clear distinction between the two in terms of the damage done at the injection site, both
mm-hmm.
in terms of dieback around the hole and dieback in living cells above and below the hole in the wood behind it. So it's a superior product,
well,
in my opinion.
Couldn't there be room for disagreement somewhere?
Absolutely.
I'm just wondering if these other arborists, if they...
Oh, yeah. I don't have any difficulty with that. It's just that I'm really quite familiar with both these products. The research that I did in conjunction with Dave French at the university put the label on Arbortech back in 1978, and then subsequent research put the label on Alamo. We got our special local use here for 1 year, and the next year we had a federal label on Alamo. So I've got faith in Alamo. It's performing for me.
We're going to go to Lee in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a neighborhood where we've had quite a few trees marked and taken down this summer. I fortunately still have an old elm in my front boulevard. Does the city of Minneapolis do its own preventative inoculation programs, or is that something I should initiate on my own?
Good question, and I guess if you look at the economics, there isn't any way that the city of Minneapolis could afford to preventively treat every 3 years every tree on public property. Their gist must be sanitation, and it works. The one thing that I wish they could do, because they have a particularly admirable program where they have tree inspectors that are out finding the trees quickly, they're dealing with Dutch elm disease quickly, they are in a position better than most communities to do something else. I mean, not in addition. Instead of removing the trees, there are trees that happen that they find and mark that are easy to save.
We're going to go to Roger, calling us from Wayzata. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, thank you. Mark mentioned several varieties of other species that he felt had been overplanted. I assume that what the reason for that would be getting into much of a monoculture. Would that be a good term?
Well, that's part of it, but it's also the fact that they are subject to their own diseases. I mean, if you plant a Norway maple or a sugar maple on your boulevard or in your yard, there's a greater probability that that tree either has or will come up with a canker disease called Eutypella than it is that any elm you would plant would ever come up with Dutch elm disease. The other problem is that the trees are not, some of the trees are not good, suitable for the site they're planted them on.
You know, you mentioned firewood earlier, that as long as the bark isn't separated from the wood, even a cut-down, chopped-up elm could pass on this disease. Does this mean we have to be careful about the firewood we buy?
Yes. Yeah. In a word, yes. And it's easy to tell elm, particularly American elm, because it has striated bark, chocolate brown vanilla in layers in the bark. And this is a story that happened to me in my neighborhood this year, where a guy down the street a half a block away had this big elmwood pile right next to his garage. There was a volunteer elm coming out from each corner of the garage. Both volunteer elms were diseased. A neighbor's tree a half a block away is diseased to the point where we can't fix it. And ironically enough, of all the elms in my neighborhood, I have one that's 5 inches that I've been cultivating since 1997. And all these other trees, mature trees all around me, and whose trees get sick? You know, I get infection in my own little elm tree. But I believe it happens from, in this case, could easily have happened from a big pile of diseased elmwood in a neighbor's yard.
So, and so you should, what, this is where it gets tricky, doesn't
yeah.
it?
You
because
need to be
what do you do? Trot over to the neighbors and say, that's got to go?
Well, yeah, or if you're in a city that has a program, you know, it's not bad to squeal on your neighbors in a case like that because they're affecting not only you. If you have an elm tree, they're affecting the potential life or death of all the elms in the neighborhood. And it's a part of the law. And you can either strip the bark off or you can cover it very well or destroy it some way or another. The problem is you can't wait for it to dry to be firewood because while it's drying is while it's spreading Dutch elm disease.
All right. And elm wood, again, it has stripes in it?
Well, in the bark.
Yeah. In the bark.
Yeah, in the outer bark or the inner outer bark, if you run a knife through it, there are striations, chocolate brown, white, chocolate brown striations in the bark. It's something that tree inspectors learn to become certified by the Department of Agriculture as a way to recognize elmwood in a wood pile.
All and right. It can what be what very if you're important. Such an innocent consumer, every year someone comes by and sells you firewood, so you should make sure you say to them, this isn't elm, or by then it's too late because it'll be dry?
Well, if they come to you with wood that's dry enough to burn, it's too late.
Okay. We're going to go to Peggy in Worthington. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
We lost a 15-year-old volunteer elm tree last summer to Dutch elm disease, and this year it has been putting up new suckers. My question is, should we leave them in hope of getting a new elm tree, or is the root system compromised and the suckers will die eventually?
That's a very good question, and I don't know the answer if I don't know whether or not the vascular lesion that was killing the tree made it into the ground. But if the tree was dead when you cut it down, the probability is that the suckers will die, too.
We're going to go to Todd calling us from St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I had heard about a city in Cleveland. I read in the paper that they were beginning to reintroduce American elms into the city because they had found a resistant strain. I think one of your calls had mentioned that earlier. And that maybe there were some plans, the city of St. Paul, to work with this company in reintroducing American elms back into the city. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard about what the plans are in the city of St. Paul, but I am privy to this discussion on Euclid Avenue in Cleveland. And it's taking some work to find the material, but it looks like they're going to be planting Valley Forge American elm and perhaps some Princeton American elm as they refurbish Euclid Avenue in Cleveland. But I can't speak to what's happening in St. Paul. There hasn't been much demand. There hasn't been much discussion about this. And I'm glad there has been this morning. I hope we continue it. I hope that if you want an elm tree, you go to your nursery and you ask for it. If they don't have it, ask them why. And don't settle for something else.
We're going to go to Cliff in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, when you're pruning an infected limb off a tree, elm tree, what are the guidelines for that? How far back into the tree do you do that? And then is that pruning wound itself need to be treated? Is it an infection site as well?
Okay, good question. If you're pruning to remove an infection from an elm tree, you got to find under the bark the staining in the wood and get about 5 feet of clear wood that's clearly uninfected because there's no stain. And that will remove, in many cases, if you have any kind of a flag at all, huge portions of the tree. And you don't have to do that because we've got two products that are remarkably effective. If they're properly injected, sufficient quantities, distributed uniformly, they will move through that lesion that's not wilting yet. They'll move through stained wood as long as there are leaves drawing water through it. Stop the fungus and give the tree the opportunity to put on a new layer of wood. Then the only thing you have to do is remove the part that's wilted sometimes after the tree is treated. Now, about the wound, there is no wound dressing that makes a difference. Dutch elm disease gets around on insects that create their own wound.
We're going to go to Edith in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning, Edith.
Thanks.
Yeah.
We're one of the streets in St. Paul that got denuded of elms quite a few years ago. Now they're working on the streets, and those of us who didn't get trees are going to be getting trees in the spring. Now, if I have a choice, what should I choose? There are a few elms left around, but plus the fact that I have these involuntary elms growing up in the backyard, I'm trying to get rid of.
That's a salute to American elm. Very aggressive tree and indigenous around here. But if you have a choice, try to get a native oak tree. I think St. Paul is providing a bicolor oak, otherwise known as swamp white oak, or northern red oak. I would reject any notion of eastern pin oak, but indigenous oak trees are very good. I mean, we need more of them. There's two myths about them. One is that they're slow growing, and that's all made up. It isn't the case at all if you were to observe oak trees and how fast they grow from the time they're young. And the other myth is that they're all going to die of oak wilt, and in St. Paul, you don't need to worry about that.
We're going to go to Pete in Golden Valley. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a single elm tree in my backyard, and I was just wondering if I don't have to worry about the surrounding elms, for the canopies touching. How susceptible is this tree to the Dutch elm disease through the beetle? Because the treatment, I had a quote from one of the local tree services, is kind of pricey.
Yeah, it's pricey.
And so I'm just wondering if that's something that's worthwhile.
Well, it depends on the city you're in and how many other dead and dying trees are around you.
Yeah, I'm in Golden Valley.
Yeah, okay. Well, the probability for you, if your tree is, say, 30 inches in diameter or bigger, the probability is probably between 30 and 40 to 1 against that your tree will become infected in any given year. The reason why you invest in protection is, the same reason you buy insurance, is that you don't want your tree to be that one in 30 or 40 that goes out every year.
We're going to go to Randy in Plymouth. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I, too, have a volunteer elm tree in my yard. It's probably 10 to 15 years old. And there are absolutely no other elm trees that I can see in the vicinity. And I'm wondering if there's a certain age when I should maybe start a preventive care, or because it's so isolated and surrounded by all different species of trees that maybe I don't have to worry about doing the fungicide?
Yeah, if you're isolated and there isn't a large wild population around you, the probabilities are very much against Dutch elm disease. Keeping in mind, however, that when they're young and growing rapidly, they are the most susceptible to infection, strangely enough. This is true about mature trees, too. The healthier they are and the faster they're growing, the more easily they become infected and the faster they die. I would encourage you to culture it, to mulch it, add water when it's dry, fertilize it once in a while, and it'll grow like nothing else could possibly grow. I mean, it'll serve your needs better than anything else you could have, especially since you have a 10-year lead.
Mark Stennis, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Catherine. It was fun.
Mark Stennis is a plant pathologist and arborist. He's the president of the Minnesota Society of Arboriculture.